There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
Welcome to today's WCN TV program. We are broadcasting live, and this is Tuesday, November 19th, 2024. Well, I missed our anniversary. WCN TV turned 5 years old on November 6th. That was our first show back in 2019, and Curtis Bowers was our guest for the very first time. Hard to believe we've been doing this every week for 5 years. I'm still trying my best, though, to get folks to tune in and participate during our live show. I know we're on at a difficult time for a lot of people just getting off work about now, but if you're able, we'd sure like to have you join us in our studio audience. I also know it may be simpler, it is simpler, to watch on our rumble.com page, especially if you're using their app. But if you just go to WCNTV.net and click on the red Join the Studio Audience button, you can be in the show with us live. And then you can ask questions, make comments, and participate together. I would really like this to be a meeting place for us all every week. Well, today we have a good friend of the ministry on the program with us. Clay Parker is our guest, and he's part of Coach Dave's Pass the Salt Ministries, as am I. And Clay has been on the scene working to help with cleanup efforts in the Appalachian Mountains following Hurricane Helene, which hit September 27th through the 29th. So today's topic is going to be a somber one. You really can't imagine or believe the massive devastation there unless you see it for yourself. And the mainstream media is really not giving this much coverage. I saw a few things right after the storm, but just like what happened in Lahaina on Maui last year, this disaster cycled out of the news stream within just a few days. But the heartbreak and suffering continues there, and now it's wintertime. People are in desperate need of help, and FEMA seems to be AWOL. We have way more to share with you today than we're likely going to get to, so let's get started. Clay, thanks for being with us today, and thank you for your service.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob. Great to see you, man. I hope I just renewed my 2-year subscription to Wisconsin Christian News, so I hope you got that in
there. Yeah, and the paper went out in mail yesterday, so.
Awesome.
I've been on the road, so I haven't had a chance to get the mail lately very, very often. So, but thank you for that. And before we jump in, Clay, why don't you kind of introduce yourself to the audience and just tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, the short version is that I'm just a father, a grandfather, husband, and more importantly, a servant to Christ. And I've always just been a hard worker, a regular guy. And, you know, I'm 52 years old now, and several years ago, I just had this, the Holy Spirit was just telling me, you've got to get more involved. You've got to do more. You've got to serve more. You know, when you leave this world, you know, what do you want to have to show for the time you've been here? And so I just dove more heavier into scripture and got involved with, some really good people. One of them being Coach Dave Dobbenmeyer and the Salt and Light team with Pastor Salt Ministries. And, became an ordained minister. And every, you know, for the last several years, I've just been serving in every way that I can find to help further the kingdom of God and do good, you know. And
you know, and coach's ministry has so many other ministries have grown out of that in the years. I've probably known him, I don't know, 12, 15 years. And so many other ministries, I've watched this thing grow and balloon and go nationwide. And it's really neat to see that happen and all the positive things that have come out of that.
It'll change your life, you know, to get involved with a good ministry team and especially one that's boots on the ground. It's a life changing thing. You know, you become a family. You've got blood family, but more importantly, you want to have your spiritual family, a family in Christ. And when you connect with other people, like-minded individuals that love the Lord, that's what happens. Your family gets bigger.
Yeah. And I, Lisa and I really missed being with you guys in June this year. That's another story, but, hopefully next summer, Lord willing. So, well, you've been on the ground in the ground zero, really. How'd you get involved and, what have you been doing there?
Well, I'm in Kingsport, Tennessee, and, Jonesboro, Tennessee is only about 23 miles from my house. And the devastation starts in Jonesboro and extends all the way over to say like Asheville, North Carolina. And it extends up into Abingdon, Virginia. And when I say that, I'm not talking about the devastation that happened between the coast and here. I'm talking about the mountainous devastation, the flooding that took place in the mountains, the wind damage that took place in the mountains. It's a wide area through the Appalachian Mountains around here. And so it takes me about 45 minutes to get to the edge of the disaster area. So that's how I got involved. I wanted to do something to help. There's a Baptist church over there called Cherry Grove Baptist Church in Jonesboro, and Grindstone Ministries responded to to provide disaster relief and recovery relief. So they set up at that Cherry Grove Baptist Church, and so I was able to just daily travel from my house to Cherry Grove Baptist Church and help in any way that they needed me. That's how I got involved.
Yep. Yep. And are you still involved or?
I'm involved, but not in the same way because, Grindstone Ministries has moved out of there. And okay. So before, that was the base camp, for three counties of Eastern Tennessee. But now things have shifted and changed, since the election. So, I'm still involved, but I'm not as close to some of the devastation areas that are active right now as some of the others. Yeah. But there's so much that we can talk about, Rob. I'll tell you, I sent you a lot of information. And
I've been studying this since it happened. And as I usually do, I don't comment right away on things until I see, you know, dig a little bit deeper into it. And I put hours and hours into a radio broadcast that I put out today. And you provided a lot of great information too. We have more, honestly, than we can get to today, but
that's right.
I think people really need to see what we're talking about. Unless you see it, you don't really get it. So Jonathan, if we can, let's look at video number one. This is 3 minutes, 19 seconds, and then we'll go from there.
Helena, you rose from the Gulf's warm embrace. We saw your face, and it was filled with rage. With winds that tore through the night, no remorse. You left your damage in your reckless course. You moved so slow, but oh, the rains they fell. The winds they screamed like a voice from hell. You took what you wanted. Nothing could stand. Homes and lives swept from the land. But hurrying in, you can't break the human heart. You can't tear apart the love we carry. Through the wreckage, through the dark, we'll rise again. We'll rebuild from the spark. You may have taken all we own, but you'll never claim our souls. You cross the Sunshine State, the Peach State's plains, but high in the mountains, you brought the pain. You erased lives like they were never there. Left families in grief, left the world unfair. But in the face of your evil whims, something stronger began to begin. Yes, you took much, but not what's real. The kindness, the love, the human will. But hell ain't me. You can't break the human heart. You can't tear apart the love we carry. Through the wreckage, through the dark, we'll rise again. We'll rebuild from the spark. You may have taken all we own, but you'll never claim our souls. In the wake of your fury, we stood hand in hand. Strangers and neighbors all across this land. You couldn't steal the hope we share, the courage to rise, to show. Can't break the human heart. You can't tear apart the love we carry. Through the wreckage, through the dark, we'll rise again. We'll rebuild from the spark. You may have taken all we own, but you'll never claim our souls.
Unbelievable. You know, nothing like this has ever happened in that area, has it?
Well, they had a bad flood. I think it was in 1977, but the people that counted that as like the most historic flood that's ever been known to this modern time era, they say that the 1977 flood that devastated this area is not even comparable.
No.
So I tell you, Rob, it's like you say, it doesn't matter how many pictures you see or video that you see on the internet. If you're here in person, it's a whole different ball game. You just can't imagine it. It almost feels like we're living in a dream. You can't imagine that this could have even happened. Yeah. And that's the thing I really want to impress to people that haven't really seen this or are familiar with it or have heard firsthand accounts of it. In those videos there, all those places where people were riding those four-wheelers and stuff through the dirt, those were actually roads, paved roads, mm-hmm. before, and they're gone. And those houses that you see, when you see a house that's still standing, if you're able to go over there and look into the house, sometimes there's 4 or 6 foot of mud and debris inside the house, all the way through the house, and sometimes through the upstairs of the house as well.
Toxic mud on top of it.
Yes. And
you know, the latest official numbers that I could come up with is they're saying there have been 230 deaths, and that includes all four states, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, North Carolina. You can add probably another 3-4 zeros to that by the time you're done, right?
Well, I would say so. The reason why, there was a guy today I saw, it was a new video of a guy today that as a reputable person, a reputable witness, and he said that he personally was standing in a place to where there were body bags filled, and they came up to his chest, and they were 45. He estimated they were 45 foot deep, and that they were stacked chest high. So if that's a true report, then the number of deaths that they're actually putting out there would have been in that one stack of bodies. And that's just in one spot. That's just in one community. So if that's true, then the numbers are not being reported.
Numbers. A lot of the bodies will never be recovered. They're buried in 30 feet of mud. They're torn apart. They're washed away. They're just gone. People have lost not only everything they own, but they've lost their families.
And when they say, well, there's no way that we'd have these missing people, you know, because people would know if their family members are missing. You have to remember that we got millions of immigrants that have crossed over the border. And so those are undocumented. And then we also have homeless camps that, you know, generally the homeless camps are in the low-lying areas a lot of times, near the woods, near the bridges, under the bridges. And nobody knew that this was coming like it did. So it swept people away. Again, let me give you an example of one report. This man was standing on his house with his wife. She had her phone out. They were facing the river. The water had been coming up, and they were going out there, and they were taking some footage on the phone. And the woman was looking through her phone. The man was looking up the river. He could probably see about half a mile up the river, and then you could see the mountain in the background. And he said, reportedly, he could see the trees do something funny that he wasn't used to seeing, some movement up in the trees on the mountain. And he heard a noise that he had not heard before. And because of those trees moving in a strange way, he said, we better go inside. And she turned her camera off, and they turned, and 5 seconds later, a wall of water hit them that knocked him out, destroyed their entire house, destroyed their neighbors' houses, and he lost his wife and daughter, and he woke up and survived. But that's how it's quick terrible. That wall of water come on top of him. He didn't even see it coming.
Yeah. Well, I know you have some photos as well. Jonathan, can we scroll through Clay's photo album? And Clay, as we do this, maybe just tell us what we're looking at on each one.
Now, all right. Can you see it up there now? That first one.
I lost my monitor. Where is my where would I find my monitor, Jonathan? Well, it doesn't matter. As long as you guys can see it, that's good. Okay, let's go.
I can't see anything. This is Breck. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, Rob, I just joined. This is Breck.
Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's up there. It's up there. You got Coach Gary and I think Mike Blake. I can see them.
All righty. That picture right there is in that's where I was talking about, that I can get to that point where we're standing. That's down near Jonesboro, Tennessee, or Embryville is what they call it. And that's only about 45 minutes from my house. And if you look in the background behind Coach Dave and Gary and Mike, there's a chimney sticking up right over Mike's head.
Yep.
And the house is gone. The slab's off his right shoulder over there, and the house is gone. So the only thing that's left that's standing there is the slab. And right over there in the bushes, you can't see it, but you can barely see it, but right over the top of Coach is a car. And then behind that car, behind some of that is some jet skis and some other things. But anyway, the water is probably 150 yards away. The river is probably 150 yards away from that chimney. So Coach would be looking towards the river. So now, like in that picture you're looking at now, the river is well behind those houses right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the water came up. Not only did the water come up probably 25 feet above normal levels, but it also came up, you know, way out of its banks. That these houses, all these houses right here that are still standing, the whole inside of them, that right there, the water came through that house and blew out the wall. Yeah. It's full of mud. They lost everything that was in that house. And the people that lived in this area were not required to have flood insurance to get a mortgage because they were well above the flood elevations.
No. Yeah.
This house that you see here, that's what remains, the basement. That's the only thing left from that house. The whole house got swept down the river. There's another one where there's a swimming pool and a slab of a house. It was a nice size house, modern house. It's completely gone.
Yep.
This is what near the house looked like. That's just not far from where the house was wiped away. That's one that, you know, was swept off its foundations and is on the banks of the creek now. And this here is a great picture because if you see, it looks like what is tomato plants in that field. So that was a field that was being, you know, hasn't been harvested yet, and those tomatoes were growing. And this is what all the low-lying area fields near the river looked like that got overtaken by mud. Not only did it get mud in it and destroy the crops, but now all these fields are filled with auto parts, debris, metal, wood, all the stuff. Before they can go back and cultivate this field for the next season, they've got to clear all that stuff out of the field or else they're going to tear up their equipment.
Well, not to mention all the toxins. As I understand it, there were chemical plants and factories and manufacturing plants that got wiped away, and that's all in the mix. And these are forever chemicals that you just don't get rid of. Somebody said it was like East Palestine, Ohio, times 1,000.
Well, it is. And if you're worried about eating vegetables that are organic, well, all these vegetables that are going to be growing in this contaminated mud chemical field is who knows what's going to be in those vegetables. You know, it's this picture that you see here, that's a person that was blessed to still have the home standing, but all the contents of the home are in front of the house. So the house, the only thing they're going to be able to do is gut that entire house if it's even salvageable, because it has that's a home that looks like it had a basement. All the contents in that house is gone. If you didn't have flood insurance, then you don't even get your contents replaced by your insurance.
Right, right.
That's the town of Black Mountain, North Carolina. This is in Black Mountain, that's an auto repair shop. So think about everything that's in an auto repair shop when you get to antifreeze, oil, transmission fluid, batteries. All this stuff went into our river system.
Wow.
This is Irwin, Tennessee, right there. Go to the next photo. You'll see the hospital. That's the hospital. It was a brand new hospital, and the people had to get on the roof and get evacuated by helicopter.
Has that been made operational again?
No, it's shut down. They've gutted. I think they're gutting the hospital. I think they're going to either try to rebuild it inside the same building. That was the inner. That go back to that last picture. It was just a second, Jonathan. That's the interstate. That is the interstate going through Irwin, Tennessee, right there.
Hmm.
The interstate bridge. And then that next photo is. This is prior to the storm, that bridge that spans the river right there. You can see it's probably about 25 feet above normal water level.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's the bridge before the flood. And now that's the bridge after the flood.
Wow.
It's completely gone. This next picture will be an overhead shot. The Appalachian Trail comes in right over to the left side of this picture. And that's a hostel with the red roof where people stay when they come down off that Appalachian Trail. Now, the Appalachian Trail, on the map for the Appalachian Trail, it would tell you to cross this bridge in order to stay on the Appalachian Trail. Now, they can't go across that bridge, so that extended the Appalachian Trail by 5 more miles. You have to detour to go around. That church on the right there, it had a fellowship building behind that church. You can see the dirt where the fellowship building used to be. And when the flood came through there, it washed it down probably about 1,000 yards and set it in somebody else's field. If you back out of that picture a little bit, you can kind of see that way up in the upper right corner of that picture, you can see in the dirt area there, you can barely see that building right off in the wood line.
Yeah.
But that's the bridge that broke in half and washed down the river. This is debris. That was an island. That right there was a wooded, forested island, and that's what's left of that heavily forested island right there. This is called Lake Lure. It's in North Carolina. I want you to imagine this. Everything that went down the river stopped right here at Lake Lure. And so you had everything we talked about, houses, debris, cars, chemicals. And then all the bodies would have also, that made it this far down, would have went into this area. Now, the bodies are not going to float on the first couple, few days. So once the bodies start floating, they come up and they get underneath this debris. There's no way to even get to the bodies. Then the bodies settle back down to the bottom. How are you ever going to get bodies out of this lake?
I cannot imagine.
This is all in Lake Lure. And then this is when they drained Lake Lure. My understanding is this is when they drained Lake Lure, and then they got heavy equipment in there and started trying to move all the debris out of the lake best they could. Now, I don't even really hardly like talking about this particular subject, but I want you to imagine something. There's cars and trucks that all this debris went down through the river so violently that the cars and trucks look like they went through a compactor, and all they are is a hunk of metal. So unfortunately, if you were a human body that was in this going down that river, you got torn apart. There's not much left of the bodies once they get down to where if they went a long ways down the river in all this debris, there's not much left to recover. It's just, it's I hate to say that, but that's how it is. This is a train track right here. We've got train tracks by CSX Railroad and the train tracks for miles and miles through the mountains are completely destroyed. This train track's hanging in the air. There's not even any earth underneath it anymore. Now the railroad's out there right now trying to repair all this, but how long is it going to take before you can run a train across this? We have no idea how long it's going to take. This is one of the camps. The primary camps is called Camp Miller. It's over in Pensacola, North Carolina, and they're doing great service to the community out of this Camp Miller. This is just photos of Camp Miller in operation right here.
And when you're talking about this camp, this was set up by individuals, right?
Yes.
Yes, individual organizations.
And I think there was some cooperation with TEMA, Tennessee Emergency Management Agency, but for the most part, volunteers and churches.
Right.
The problem is when you got these supplies too, you see tons of supplies and you go, wow, they got tons of supplies coming in. One of the problems with all supplies coming in that a lot of people didn't understand is in this situation. Hold on to that photo right there for just a minute, Jonathan. In this situation, people lost their entire homes. So when you bring them all this, these supplies, people don't understand that they're basically bringing supplies to a homeless person. Now, how many supplies can a homeless person carry around with them?
Right.
So in this photo right here, this man that's got his arm outstretched, smiling happily, standing next to his girlfriend there, he lost his entire home. So these men come in, this team of men came in and built that shed for him. That way, when he gets supplies, he has a place to put the supplies and put a lock on the door, and then he can stay in a tent outside of there, and then he can guard his supplies from people that's coming around trying to take the supplies from him. If you don't have just that basic shelter or shed, then you really have nowhere to put your supplies. That's right. Been the problem with the supplies. And I just want you to look at this is the human spirit that you see right here. These people still have joy, even though they're in a devastated area and this man lost his home and this man has had his property devastated. They've still got joy in their hearts.
Yeah.
This man right here, his name's Jake Jarvis. He's got a company called Precision Grading. And he takes his daughter and his family out there to help him. But he's got a company. So his company's still in operation. But he himself has dedicated his time and equipment to help with this this disaster cleanup. So when he gets a donation in, if you donate $1,000 to him, well, then he matches that with his own time and equipment hours. So he's going to give you $2,000 worth of work for your $1,000 donation.
Mm-hmm.
He's been out there. There's his contact information right there. He's got a Venmo account. And it's at Jake Jarvis 13 right there.
Yeah, we'll put, we're going to be discussing where people can donate toward the end of the show. And we will also put that information in the show notes.
So. Well, the problem with this guy is that this is how evil people are. Somebody's tried to, they made another account that's just like his. So if you don't use the phone number, the last four digits of his phone number to link to his account, then it goes to somebody that's stealing the money.
Wow.
Ain't that great?
Yeah. There's always people like that out there. Is that the end of our photos?
Yes, believe so.
Okay. All right. Well, let's look at some more video footage here. If we can do video two and then follow it up right away with video three. This is going to be about 4 minutes of video time, but it's important. And then we will get into it. And Jonathan, is it all right if we go a little bit over time tonight? Okay, because we're going to probably need to do that. So let's do that. And then we will, folks in the studio audience, if you have questions or comments, you'd like to say something, we'll bring you in after these videos.
Helena, you rose from the Gulf's warm embrace. We saw your face, and it was filled with rage. With winds that tore through the night, no remorse. You left your damage in your reckless course. You moved so slow, but oh, the rains they fell. The winds, they scream like a voice from hell. You took what you wanted, nothing could stand. Homes and lives swept from the land. But Helene, you can't break the human heart. You can't tear apart the love we carry. Through the wreckage, through the dark, we'll rise again. We'll rebuild from the spark. You may have taken all
Sunshine State, the Peach State's plains. But high in the mountains, you brought the pain. You erased lives like they were never there. Left families in grief, left the world unfair. But in the face of your evil winds, something stronger began to begin. Yes, you took much, but not what's real. The kindness, the love, the human will. But hell ain't me, you can't break the human heart. You can't tear apart the love we carry. Through the wreckage, through the dark, we'll rise again. We'll rebuild from the spark. You may have taken all we own, but you'll never claim our souls.
Yeah, Rob, that I tell you what I'd like to say, I guess, to try to make everybody understand this. If you were living out into these holler, what they call the hollers around here, there's only like one way in and one way out, sometimes two. But a lot of these roads, there's one way in and one way out. And some of those photos that you saw, the road was washed away. There's no more road. There was no way to get in and out of there. And around here, I used to live down in Mobile, Alabama, on the coast, and been in, you know, what you'd consider Hurricane Alley. When you lived down there, you expected a lot of devastation and water and rain. But up here in the mountains, when they say a hurricane is coming in on the coast or a tropical storm is coming in, you don't worry about it. You know you're going to get a little bit of rain. A lot of rain, and you know you're going to get some water and a little wind, and you know, hey, after it's over, you might have to clean a tree up out of the yard or fix your fence or repair a few shingles or something like that. That's what the people that were in these hollers thought. So they weren't concerned about evacuating or the water coming up over their porches or anything. And so,
yeah, it's never happened before.
And think about this. If you're out there in these hollers and the power goes off and the internet goes off and you don't know what's going on, and then all of a sudden the water starts coming up, and we're in an area where we've got the Tennessee Valley Authority, which has got dams on the rivers every so often. And when you start seeing the water come up and it starts coming up higher and higher and higher, well, then you have no way of knowing what's going on. And then all of a sudden, when you've got wind that's coming in like it's never come through this area before, because normally a hurricane dissipates as it comes on the land. This one was still putting out enough wind damage to destroy trees. I rode over the across the top of a mountain, and I'd say out of every 100 trees, there was only 3 trees standing. In some places. So there was just seas and oceans of trees in some areas where the trees were all just laid over. So the people that were in these hollers with this water coming up 25, 30 feet above normal levels and washing their houses away, and them having to evacuate through the back door and go up onto the mountains to try to survive. Once it's all said and done, and they're standing there in the rain, they're probably thinking, what in the world happened? They knew that there was a tropical storm coming, but they're probably thinking, did something else happen? Did the world end? Did somebody set off a nuclear bomb somewhere? Because this was supernaturally abnormal to the area.
Yeah.
And then
the mudslides come. Yeah. Let's watch this next clip real quick, and then we'll bring in our audience.
The floodwaters are gone now. The river back into its banks back there next to the tree line. But when they came through almost instantly, it covered all of these river bottoms and water. Two barns were right here, a structure there and a barn there. Those are now down to just a pile of metal. Some of the stuff inside found almost a mile downstream at this point. Then the homes. Take a look at this one over here. The water rushing through the doors. Everything inside this home is destroyed. What's left behind is a massive amount of mud. David Thompson's farm has been in his family for over 200 years. He was born here. He's lived here his whole life. Friday, the river took everything.
Of course, the building's gone, the sheds is gone, everything's gone. Smokehouse is gone, all the carports, tractors, machinery, trucks, cars, house. It's all gone. There ain't nothing left.
Thompson survived the Great Flood of 77, as they call it, but he says this one is far worse. This time, he says, his fields will never recover.
These sand and mud over there in alfalfa fields, that's over my head. It's so deep.
Mark Davis was driving by Friday night and saw the river rising. He stopped to help Thompson get out. Now he's helping clean up.
And this is just total devastation to this area in the Nolichucky River Valley. It's just indescribable of the loss that's happened here.
David Thompson doesn't have flood insurance and tells me he's thankful for all of the work you see going on here to try to rebuild. But he says he'll never live here again on his family farm. There's simply nothing to come home to.
I'm going to try to get a permit and everything today or tomorrow one for this house and my other house over there and get them pushed up in a pile and burn. There ain't nothing left.
In Washington County, Tennessee, Preston Ayers, News 5, WCYB.
No insurance.
Yeah, and the thing is, Rob, if you wanted to rebuild, if he wanted to rebuild there, you may not be able to rebuild right there, because what's happening is they're coming in and they're reevaluating what is the flood zone. And now they're looking at the flood zones and saying, hey, we got to update this. We got to revise the areas of the flood zones. So people that had, if you don't have your home, even if you had your home paid off, if you didn't have it insured and now you don't have the funds to rebuild your home, then in order to get a mortgage, then you got to make sure that you've got flood insurance if it's within a flood zone.
So. Well. And you even know, so in
you
in
may
his
not
case,
you may not be able to rebuild in the same spot that you had a house before.
Yeah, and if you're a farmer, you have no land to farm on anymore either. So, all right, I promised you. Let's go into our audience. Ray has his hand up. If anyone else has a question or comment, just there's a little hand button you can push. Press that, and I'll bring you in as soon as we can. Ray, you're up.
Yeah. We were planning on going down there, Clay, a month ago when Rhinestone Ministry was there. And the reason they pulled out, partly I heard, is the grounds that they were going to try to rebuild are contaminated. Is it kind of futile that these people have not been notified and they're trying to rebuild on land that eventually the government's going to tell them this is uninhabited land, everything you're doing is going to be torn down because you are not allowed to live on this land anymore under the condition it's in. And I'm hearing stories of people getting deathly sick from this. So I think it's a reality. How are the people going to deal with that aspect of it? That's partially why a lot of the efforts to go down there and rebuild or be installed. What do you think? Well, and the lithium they want, right?
Yeah, well, it's hard to say about the lithium situation. That's a very good possibility. But the problem is we're at least 2 months into this, and we're still really in phase one. I mean, we're past the area where there's nobody left that's in the woods to recover that's alive. So we're past that point, but we're not past the recovery of bodies yet. That's still out there to be done. But before we get into rebuilding houses right now, we're still in the phase of trying to get roads in just to adequately access people's houses and properties. So what's happening is, the river came in and it wiped out the roads and the railroads on both sides of the river. So now all you have is mountains and a river. So where people had their houses and properties before, they're going to have to come in and probably take that land from these people in order to put a roadway back in just to get into the areas where the other houses are. So we're in a terrible situation. So before we can even think about rebuilding houses, we've got to try to get the supplies and the power turned on and get people whose homes are damaged. We got to try to get in there and help them be prepared for the winter months before we can even think about getting to the phase of rebuilding houses into the contaminated mud. You know, so we're still a pretty good ways away from that. So right now, there's the only homes that are getting repaired are the ones that didn't get overly damaged, and the only ones that are getting rebuilt at this point, to my understanding, are the ones that's pretty much well out of the flood zone area and not right along the river.
Okay, Deanne and then Harry.
Hey, Clay. Trying to explain to a friend of ours who's very liberal what's going on and how FEMA is not helping. And what do I hear? Yeah, you have no proof. You're just listening to your right wingers. How do you go about explaining this to somebody that it's true that FEMA's not helping?
We're actually going to be getting into that too.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, the thing is, we're in an information war. Everybody on both sides needs to remember that we're in an information war. So you've got both sides trying to use the internet to be combative towards one another and spread rumors and turn people towards each other. And let me give you an example of that. Of this, this is the best example I can come up with right now. If you had a FEMA woman the other day that came out and said that she was told by people above her to avoid going to people's houses that had Trump that were Trump supporters. So she said she was told by upper levels to, when you go in into the devastation area, try to avoid helping those people. And that was what she was told. Okay. So that's one side of it. Now, the other side of it is we live in an area here to where people want to take care of themselves and they don't trust the government. They don't want to have anything to do with free government handouts. A lot of them don't. And they definitely don't want to sign any paper that they don't have a lawyer reading first to get any benefits if they don't understand what they're signing. So they don't necessarily want the government to step in and provide them any help. So if you have a FEMA team on the ground, which this is my understanding of kind of how it went down. You have a FEMA team that comes on the ground. They're coming into these hollers and into the woods and everything, and they're encountering people that don't know who you are. You say you're from FEMA and you're here to help, but they don't trust the government. And so some people say, "Hey, I don't want you here. You get off my property." All right. Well, you got the other side, FEMA, who upper level are telling you don't go in there and help the Trump supporters. So if that's really happening, which I believe it is, then all they have to do is use that. If this person said, "Hey, get off my property," then all they have to do is go back to their supervisor and say, "Hey, we tried to go help these people. They refused our help. They threatened us, told us to get off the property or else." Then they have the ammunition that they need to say, "We had to pull our teams out of there for our own safety." You understand how this works? It's like a big game. It's like a big game. They can say, "We went in there and tried to help them, but they run us off." But everybody's not running them off. All they need is just a few incidents of that happening, and then they can use that as ammunition to say, "We had to pull our FEMA teams out because we felt threatened."
Yeah. Harry, you still with us?
Yeah, I am. But Dan asked him. Clay answered. So
okay.
I'll pass.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's move on here. Our federal government's sheer ineptness has been on full display throughout all of this. And from confiscating supplies that volunteers have brought in to threatening to arrest people who came to help, and meanwhile, expecting people to register for aid using their cell phones and the internet. I don't know, Clay, it's unbelievable.
Yes.
Let's look at a couple more videos here quickly, and we are going to go over time tonight, but hopefully not too long, but we need to get a lot more information in here. Let's do video 4 and show 3 minutes of that.
Hey guys, welcome back. I am Jason, and I am in Pensacola, North Carolina, Camp Miller. And I've met an awesome guy here that's been doing tons of work. And you've been up here for how long?
Since day one.
Since day one, he's been here getting after it, solving problems, getting stuff done. Quickly introduce yourself and tell him kind of what you do.
Yeah, my name's Adam Zart. I have a home on Beach Mountain. On day one, it was only accessible by helicopter, and I rent that place out. I actually have friends that were supposed to stay there. Thankfully, I was able to stop that from happening. I reside in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I run relief operations out of Pineville, North Carolina.
Okay. So could you kind of paint a picture of this area, like what's been going on, what you've been working on, so people that are not familiar, what's been going on?
Yeah, so this area, we're in Pensacola, North Carolina, which really isn't a town. It's kind of a township just outside Burnsville. This is kind of ground zero right now, one of the best areas to be for a forward operating base because everybody can camp here, have meals, and then branch out into the community. We're down the ravine from Mount Mitchell, and Mount Mitchell just got hammered. So the further you get from here, the worse it gets. So this is actually a good spot.
Mount Mitchell's like over here, isn't it?
It is.
Yes, yeah. So yeah, the river valley coming in here, driving on the drive-in. We'll show some footage of that. It's just annihilated. It's a brown, dirty mess.
It is just
the wall of water that came through here was insane. You talked to somebody that I talked to yesterday about it, sitting by the fire, said there was like waves of water coming in, and every time the wave came in it was like 3 feet and
yeah.
3 feet and 3 feet
just
yeah
kept going up.
Yeah, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was a report from somebody that lives here, and he said when he was watching the river start to rise, it got about the road height, and he went back inside, came out, saw a wall of water gushing, and the water level raised 3 feet. He said every 10 minutes or so, he would get a wall of water come in, and it would raise the water level about 3 feet until, I think that guy said it was pushing 40, 50 feet in his valley.
Yeah, some of the narrower channels, narrower valleys, the water height got crazy. Where it spread out, the water slowed down a little bit. Water wasn't quite so high, but some of these really narrow valleys, kind of like this one, the water was crazy.
It was.
Insane.
We were near Relief, North Carolina the other day, and the water level from the flood is about 40 feet up the mountainside. And they're requesting high rope skilled guys to go up there because there's actually debris 40 feet up the mountainside up there with people's belongings.
Really?
Yep.
Well, what's some of the craziest stuff that you've experienced since you've been here since day one? I've been coming and going. You've been here.
Search and recovery and cadaver dogs. We were working a riverbed out here in a very isolated area. And they had 7 confirmed FEMA pings on cadavers in that riverbed. That they requested us to go in and start clearing ways for excavators and stuff in there. We located a debris pile with a bathroom in it where we believed there was people inside there. We worked for 8 hours with 30 people, and you could barely tell we made a dent in it. We called in the coordinates for it and alerted that there was a cadaver in the area and they needed to come out and check it out. The next day I came back and FEMA, who was supposed to be there, was about 2,000 yards away from where they were supposed to be, standing in a sand pile. I mean, there was nothing around. And I told them, hey, you're in the wrong spot. I know where you need to be. They wouldn't move, which I understand, they're under orders. The next day I came by and that entire debris pile was on fire. I don't know. I don't know the coincidences that line up to that, but it's very interesting that I firsthand know how hard we had to work with 30 people to get a little bit done.
Yeah.
And the extent or the magnitude of how much work was going to have to go in to recover seven people in that debris pile and to get the equipment in there. We have vehicles getting stuck. We're having to tow vehicles out. So I don't know if the cost wasn't worth the reward or if it...
Okay, we have one more clip I want to get in here right away. Number five, just a little over a minute. I know I'm putting you on the spot, Jonathan.
So my very first supply drop on day one, we moved supplies into a very impoverished area in western North Carolina under threat of arrest. We set up a hub. We got fuel to the community. Everything was going great for the first 8 or 9 days. The community leader reached out to me on day 8 or 9 and said, hey, FEMA set up a camper behind our supply depot. They haven't gotten out of their campers in 3 days. They haven't helped. They're just watching us. I'm afraid of what's going to come next. The next night, she called me. I was on my way back from Black Mountain, and she said FEMA just came in and moved all of my employees out by order of the federal government and seized all of our supplies and moved them out the side door. We have no idea where those supplies went. My wife and I spent a day or two making go bags to hike into the Hollers because at that time the Hollers were inaccessible, so you needed skilled backpackers to go in with it. They took all that. We have no idea where it went.
Wow.
So that's crazy. That is a real confirmed report from my real contact that lives in
Did you hear a lot of stories?
So you can say this is all conspiracy theories about FEMA, but... I don't know about you, but I believe the guy. So, and now winter's here. People are in serious need of housing. They need heat, electricity, restroom facilities, as well as food and supplies because these people have lost everything. And obviously, they've also lost their jobs because everything's destroyed. There is a FEMA camp with hundreds of housing units, but apparently that's not for the survivors. It's for FEMA employees only, and the public isn't allowed in. So that takes us to video number six. Start at the 2:30 mark, Jonathan, if you would.
You know, help that we need is, it's really awful.
Some just down the road have it even more awful, living in tents and small RVs with no power as winter approaches and temperatures now dip into the 30s.
There's times we don't get fresh meat because there's no way to keep it cold. Because you got to choose between heating the house with the generator, especially the ones who have kids, and keeping the food cold.
Winter time's coming. These folks cannot be forgot about. Just because you don't see this on TV, don't just go away. This is not going to go away for a long time. We got to get those folks out of those tents and in those FEMA campers. How's it going to happen?
A lot of the locals I've spoken to are particularly upset about a FEMA compound they say is much nicer than the donated trailers that they are staying in. It's hard to see, but this right here, I'm going to slow down, is the entrance to the compound. There's a lot of security. The public can't go in.
We drove up onto a hill behind the compound for a better view, and you see how massive it is. A sea of government trailers. It's so organized and secure. So different from how the people we met are living here.
FEMA's not connecting with the county, the county's not connecting with the state, and you got this big rat race.
Volunteers like combat veteran Robbie Ammons say housing is the biggest issue, and red tape. Families left in tents and RVs because of the permitting process, he says.
Next week, temperatures are gonna start getting in the 30s at night. We're afraid of more hypothermia, folks that are living in the mountains. And there's probably going to be more bodies laying around if we don't start getting these people in some level of temporary housing.
So that's our situation. I don't want to cut you off here, Clay. I'm going to give you plenty of time here after this. But before we get way out of time, I want to make sure we get this in. I want to talk about what caused this. Obviously, there will never be proof that this storm was steered to hit Tennessee and North Carolina, but the evidence of that is shocking, as is the reason behind it. So let's look at this this last video that I have for you. This is our band video, Jonathan. Do you have it? There we go.
We have had the technology to create, control, and steer hurricanes for decades.
Project Cirrus is the first official attempt to modify a hurricane. It was run by General Electric with the support of the U.S. military. The official theory was that by changing the temperature outside the eye wall of a hurricane, which they did by seeding the clouds with various compounds such as silver iodide, a decrease in strong winds will result. On October 13, 1947, Project Cirrus targeted a hurricane heading out to sea. Approximately 180 pounds of dry ice was dropped into the clouds. The crew then reported a pronounced modification of the cloud deck, and the hurricane abruptly changed direction and made landfall near Savannah, Georgia. The public blamed the government. Irving Langmuir, who pioneered General Electric's Atmospheric Research Department and admitted that the project was about learning how to weaponize the weather, also claimed the reversal of the hurricane had been caused by Project Cirrus. But the government denied it for 12 years. After a short delay, the project officially continued, and in 1965, Project Storm Fury had targeted Hurricane Betsy for seeding. On that day, the storm immediately changed direction and made landfall in southern Florida. Congress blamed it on Project Storm Fury, but the government claimed that the hurricane shifted before they ever had a chance to seed it. And after 2 months of congressional hearings, the project was allowed to continue.
In 1997, U.S. Defense Secretary William Cohen admitted we have the technology to control the weather, including earthquakes and volcanoes. The U.S. government has placed gag orders on employees of the National Weather Service. In October of 2012, after Hurricane Sandy weakened to a tropical storm, microwave imagery shows a thick red beam immediately followed by Sandy growing into a Category 1 hurricane and taking an unexplained left turn into New Jersey. The push towards alternative energy demands more lithium, and according to the U.S. Geological Survey, the United States has over 6 million tons of identified lithium resources. The majority of this lithium has been identified in Kings Mountain, North Carolina. Kings Mountain is believed to have one of the largest resources in the world, but the biggest problem is that people live there, and they don't want their quiet towns turned into lithium mines.
People in Schererville have been pushing against a proposed lithium mine for the last several years, but everyone we spoke with here said it's too divisive of an issue to share their opinion on camera. Schererville is a small, quiet town.
I think that's good that we keep it small.
So quiet, many don't feel comfortable speaking out against Piedmont Lithium's proposed mining operation nearby.
I think we're a silent majority. I think a lot of people are afraid to say anything about it because they are bringing a lot to the town as far as money.
Last year, the Department of Defense entered a $90 million agreement with Albemarle Corporation to increase domestic production of lithium for the nation's battery supply chain, specifically from Kings Mountain, North Carolina, starting by 2025. This is the same area experiencing what is being described as biblical floods. While the federal government spends billions on foreign wars and illegal immigrants, they simply cannot be bothered with the health and well-being of the American people, especially those living on coveted mineral-rich land. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
All right, so take that to your skeptics, Ian. You can cut that, Jonathan. What do you think, Clay?
Well, I think that if, you know, there's no doubt in my mind, I've been studying, researching for years off and on, you know, not on a regular basis, but off and on, I've been looking into weather modification for years. You know, it's not something that's new. We just don't know how far along they've got. Have they perfected it to the point to where they could have directed this thing over these mountains? You know, it's hard to say. If they didn't, then, man, they hit the jackpot with a perfect opportunity to take advantage of a bad situation, because there's no doubt in my mind they're not going to let a disaster go to waste if it'll benefit them in any way, shape, or form. You know, the people that are in control are going to try to – the bankers and the investors are going to try to use anything that is their advantage to take advantage of the people to get richer and to make more money and to make the stock market go up, up, up.
Well, and interestingly, I also found out that on August 31st, BlackRock, which is the world's largest investment company, it owns virtually everything in the world, bought 2 million shares in Albemarle Corporation, which has that Department of Defense contract for Kings Mountain, August 31st, so less than a month before this happened. Like I said, we're never going to know. We're never going to know that. But the evidence certainly does point to it. Any questions from the audience before we start wrapping things up here? All right. So, Clay, we need to get more help to these people. We can't rely on the government to do it. Tell us about the verified and trusted people and organizations that people can support to help the survivors right now.
All right. Well, Appalachian Service Project is one really good effort that's going on. What they're doing is they've committed to come into the area and repair or rebuild at least 200 houses in the area. And they've already started. And they're setting up a shop in Johnson City, Tennessee, which is only about 30 or 40 miles from me. So if you want to volunteer to help rebuild houses, you can go to this website and you can apply to help, or you can make donations to the cause. And the more money that they get, the quicker they'll be able to build the homes, and the more people they'll be able to help. But that's not something that's going to be an immediate assistance for everybody. So more importantly for immediate assistance is going to be this company called, or this small business called Life-Size Dwellings.
Yeah, I was excited about that one. They're actually building tiny houses for people to get through the winter.
Yeah, Life-Size Dwellings are building tiny homes and shelters, and they're having to work off donations and volunteer efforts to help get this stuff done. So they've got a great video on TikTok that you can view.
I'm Adam Spencer.
I'm Callie Spencer.
We're the owners of Life.
Yeah, we can show that quick.
Dwellings, small Western North Carolina construction company established in 2016.
Following the Hurricane Helene devastation,
we've been dedicated to helping those in need with various free services. At first, we did this out of our company funds, but that was not sustainable, so we came to you for help. We've already received generous donations, which enabled us to serve our community for free for a month. Our versatile crew has provided an abundance of tree clearing services, driveway grading, debris removal, generator repair, supply deliveries, and anything else that our neighbors have requested.
Starting next week, though, we are getting back to what we do best, being carpenters.
We will focus our efforts on building tiny, primitive shelters for displaced families. A lot of these people are currently living in tents. The shelters will be 10 by 16 with one window and door, 4 to 6 receptacles to power a hot plate, microwave, and charge cell phone, batteries, etc. We will stock them with a space heater, small propane heater, canned goods, and other donations that have been collected by surrounding churches. We partner with Michael from Painless Home Repair, a fellow contractor who has been instrumental in coordinating this initiative. We also have Alex from Locke's Family Farms joining us for a week from Indiana to provide his electrical expertise and wire the shelters for generator hookup.
I think we can scrape together enough to build 2 of these tiny shelters. If you were able to contribute, we'll build as many as possible that we can get funding for. I personally would like to build 15 in 5 days. Every dollar or share counts. We'll be providing video footage as well as pictures and commentary of people as we deliver these to sites.
Together, we will be putting these families back into homes and providing them with some much needed normalcy. Every dollar and share is so appreciated. You can contribute via Venmo, Zelle, or GoFundMe, which I'll link in the description. Everything will go into the business account and directly to this cause.
Thank you all so much for your support. Let's see what we can do.
And Jonathan, you will put the all that information where people can donate in the show notes. Great. So you can find that in the show notes after the program. Clay, final words.
Well, and then that Jake Jarvis. And then one thing that I'm doing that people can email me about is I've got these great little books right here. These are the Life and Times of Jesus of Nazareth. They're little leather-like bound books set up kind of like a little Bible. But they took all of Jesus' teachings and put them in these little volumes. I've got those, and I'm also doing a Bible drive. And so these are the King James Version of the Holy Bible. So what I'm doing is, as I go out through these devastated areas and I'm making contact with all these people that lost everything in their homes, I'm making sure that they got the words of Jesus in their hands so that they can have something to turn to help them. So if you want to help with this, just simply email me, and then I'll let you know how you can help with the Bible drive.
And Ray says, that's awesome, Clay. And I second that. Any final comments from our audience before we go? All righty. Well, I hope you will share this program, help us get this information out, and help us help the people that need the help. Winter's here, folks, and there is no time to waste. We'll put Clay's email in the show notes along with the organizations that we recommend that you support. And I hope you will support them, even if you can't be there in person to do any heavy lifting. All of us can do something. So God bless you, Clay. Thanks for taking the time, and thanks for your service on the ground there.
God bless you. Thank you for all that you do, and thank you to everybody that's listening and supporting Wisconsin Christian News and forward in the kingdom, and just please keep everybody in your prayers.
All righty. Dr. Michael will be with you next week. I'll be back in a couple of weeks, and Curtis Bowers will be back with us. So we'll see you then. And until then, share this program. God bless you. Bye.